from KQED.
This is the California Report podcast. I'm Lily Jamali in San Francisco. On today's show, we've got the latest on how Iranian Americans are reacting to the standoff between the U.S. and Iran, including an interview with Persis Karim, who's the director at San Francisco State's Center for Iranian Diaspora Studies. We also have the latest on Megxit, as in Meghan Markle and Prince Harry exiting from the royal family. But we begin in San Diego, where we're learning that the congressional seat about to be vacated by Representative Duncan Hunter will stay unfilled until next year. A spokesperson for Governor Gavin Newsom confirmed yesterday that the governor will not call a special election for the office. Hunter represents California's 50th congressional district, including parts of San Diego and Riverside counties. He submitted his resignation to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi earlier this week after previously pleading guilty to misusing campaign funds. Staying in San Diego, Iranian immigrants there and in cities throughout the state are concerned about what lies ahead as the standoff between the U.S. and Iran remains tense. KPBS reporter Matt Hoffman explains.
We live abroad, but at the same time, our heart and our mind is gravitating towards Iran. We are very connected with Iran.
Mehdi Moeen is from Iran and now leads the nonprofit House of Iran, which is a cultural center in San Diego. He's lived in the U.S. for more than 30 years and says Iranians in San Diego are hoping tensions do not escalate further.
A chain reaction is what everybody is concerned with, and when there is no way to control the action or reactions. Of course, as a community of immigrants, we are concerned here.
Moeen says he's concerned that Trump's anti-Iran rhetoric could negatively impact Iranian immigrants here.
I have seen and I've heard Iranians that have complained about them being targeted and, in fact, some being insulted. So that is fact of life for us. Hence the request for the American friends, colleagues, and people of San Diego that understand us and walk with us and understand that we have come here in order to build this society together with you.
For the California Report, I'm Matt Hoffman in San Diego.
Well, California is home to the largest population of Iranians and Iranian Americans outside of that nation. Demonstrations against a further escalation of tensions have become a familiar sight this week, including in Los Angeles. Yesterday, five local Muslim organizations there gathered to speak out against military actions in Iran, which have caused anxiety in some parts of the Muslim American community. Omar Ricci is chair of the Islamic Center of Southern California.
We don't want to see our country going to another war. Our actions in that part of the world have been misguided for decades. And so this seems like something that would, get us into another endless war, as they've been saying. And we wanted to make sure our voices were heard.
Aside from the stress of seeing missile strikes on TV, Ricci says he also worries about his own daughter. She's serving in the military.
You know, all of a sudden there was a level of stress that I've never really felt before, thinking that your firstborn child could be sent into the region and fight a foe that is very well equipped. And you think of, your daughter's life and the life of other young men and women in our military going overseas. So it was stressful and anxious.
The LA group say they support legislation in the House of Representatives that would block war funding without congressional approval. Well, this past week, we've gotten an education on the current regime in Iran and the mastermind, Qasem Soleimani, who led the country's shadow war with the West. It's when Iran makes international headlines that Iranian Americans like me get asked by colleagues and friends what we think, what we know, and what might come next. And often the answer is, I don't know. But I'm glad you asked. Years ago, in the late 1990s, my aunt gave me a book called A World Between, a collection of short stories in what's since become a popular genre about having two identities at odds. The editor of that book is Persis Karim. She's now the director of the Center for Iranian Diaspora Studies at San Francisco State. We spoke in her kitchen the other night about what it's like to be asked to explain current events while carrying 40 years of baggage.
Whether we know it consciously or not, we have been affected by the news and the way that
Iran comes to us is through these rather negative news headlines. So imagine for most Americans, that's all they know. We're affected also by those news headlines. We're affected by the idea that we're expected to explain.
We as Iranian Americans.
We're expected to explain things, and we don't have enough everyday experience with that, especially you and I who were born here. It's one thing if you were, you know, went to school and you have access to Persian language media. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. But part of it is we've absorbed the long, recycled playback loop of Iran in the negative, right? So whether we are aware of it or not, we might actually have subdued some of our own Iranian identification because all you see is negative stuff.
I definitely feel that. My whole life has been post-hostage crisis. And the playback loop you're talking about is all the bombs being dropped or kind of scary-looking religious leaders on television. And I have found I have compartmentalized that. I kind of put it in a box and leave it somewhere every day and don't really revisit it until moments like this.
So just in the last few days, I was interviewed for two television pieces, and while I was speaking, in the background was images of bombs dropping and images of mass crowds in Iran waving their fists. And while those events might be taking place there, they're superimposed with me speaking. So suddenly I feel like I'm in the playback loop along with those images, which are the same images of 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is something that we don't know kind of the psychological effect of that, but it's a way in which we are neither here nor there, that we are not fully American, and we're not certainly not Iranian. And so we are in the kind of in-between. So how can we tell a more complicated, nuanced human story that is not the reduction of news headlines and images of bombs and mass protests, you know, of angry people mm-hmm. in Iran? How can we tell that story?
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That was Persis Karim, who's the director for the Center for Iranian Diaspora Studies at San Francisco State. Now to the news that California is launching its own generic drug label. Governor Gavin Newsom is taking this unusual step in a bid to combat high prescription drug prices. As KQED health correspondent April Demboski reports, it's one of several reforms the governor plans to lay out in his upcoming budget.
The proposal would make California the first state in the nation to establish its own drug label. The plan is to contract with existing generic drug manufacturers to make the drugs, then the state will set the prices and sell them. The administration says this will increase competition in the generic market and result in lower drug prices for everyone. The governor says he will also build on his proposal from last year to consolidate the state's purchasing power to buy other drugs. This would allow state health agencies and private insurers to negotiate together, forcing drug companies to sell at lower prices. A trip to the pharmacy shouldn't cost a month's pay, the governor said in a statement, and this is California's way of fighting back. For the California Report, I'm April Demboski.
Also in the state budget, Governor Newsom has proposed spending $1.4 billion to tackle the state's homelessness crisis, which we first told you about on yesterday's show. KQED's Erica Aguilar has more details.
Some of the money would pay for rent subsidies and expand mental health services for the homeless. California saw about a 16% increase in homelessness between 2018 and last year. Newsom says this needs to be treated like an emergency. As part of an executive order, state agencies will identify vacant land or buildings that could be used as shelters. Bay Area State Assembly member Phil Ting says local leaders also need to do more.
Local governments collectively have failed because they've all focused on their individual self-interest, which is not, which is probably pretty normal, but they haven't focused on regional or larger statewide interests.
New federal numbers show that more than half of the people living on the streets or in vehicles in the U.S. are in California. For the California Report, I'm Erica Aguilar.
Royal watchers are trying to figure out what just happened with Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, who have announced they're stepping back from their roles as senior members of the royal family. Here in California, we want to know, might they base themselves part-time in Markle's hometown, L.A.? And what's that going to do to traffic there? The California Report's resident Royals correspondent Carly Severn is here. Hey, Carly.
Hey, Lily. How's it going?
Great. Did you notice I just gave you a promotion from Keanu correspondent?
Career progression is really important, and I'm delighted that I'm finally seeing this come to fruition.
Well, you are so very welcome. Okay, Meghan Markle and Prince Harry, this seems like kind of a big deal.
It's kind of huge. People have a lot of jokes on Twitter. There's some great stuff going around about talk about enacting your New Year's resolutions. Wow, I didn't know you could resign from your own family. Why didn't I try that years ago? And also, look, Meghan finally got Harry off welfare.
Love them all. You know, I have to ask, why? Why do you think they are doing this?
Right, because royals don't usually resign.
Yeah, isn't the whole point of marrying into the royal family to be in the royal family?
It's a business people are trying to get into rather than get out of. And so I think it's really important to understand the context in which this is happening. Harry and Meghan were the different royals, and they were loved by the public because of how different they were. But that difference meant that they were hounded by the British press in attacks that, let's just call it what it is, prejudiced attacks against Meghan Markle for being different. She is a black woman marrying into a white royal family. And the reaction from the British press, not only was it merciless, the palace did not defend Harry and Meghan too strongly against that. So that is the context in which you get this young couple with a kid making a decision to remove themselves from what, from the outside in, looks like a pretty toxic situation.
Yeah, and speaking of the royal family's reaction to this, they seem kind of blindsided by this.
I don't think they knew. If you read that statement from the royal family, they say, whoa, whoa, this is going to take time for us to do. So it seems that Harry and Meghan made this decision by themselves and decided to announce it by themselves. That's pretty telling. I mean, that is a statement in itself.
I need odds from you, Carly. What are the chances that we, here in California, L.A., gets its own royal family?
Well, Lily, I haven't spoken to Meghan in a while. So I can't.
I
can't tell you exactly what
she's
thinking.
She didn't like your wedding gift. That's what I hear on the Twitter.
But apparently, you know, she has these deep ties to LA. She's a California girl. Her mum, Doria Ragland, still lives there, apparently. So a lot of people who complain about the royals being taxpayer funded in the UK, we are told, oh no, but they bring in so much tourism. So maybe California is going to start seeing some of those tourist dollars from Harry and Meghan.
Hey, get your souvenir cup now. Your baby Archie souvenir cup. Isn't that like a thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's usually plates.
Oh, there we go.
Plates. Everyone's like, if you have a relative that's over 60, chances are there is a Princess Diana plate somewhere in that house.
All right. Carly Severn, co-host of KQED's The Cooler podcast. Thank you so much for explaining all of this.
Always my pleasure.
And that is the California Report for this Thursday, January 9th. I'm Lily Jamali. Thank you for listening.
Support for the California Report comes from Bridge Bank, a division of Western Alliance Bank, offering flexible financial solutions to entrepreneurs and to the technology and life science communities. Bridge Bank, be bold, venture wisely. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing, through science, the interdependence of all living systems.